You are listening to Wait a Minute with Beth and Jessica,
episode 73. I'm Jessica Pearson, certified life coach.
And I'm Beth Barnett-Babel, integrative nutrition therapist.
We keep our eyes peeled for things in the media or in real life that come from diet culture or that perpetuate diet culture in some way. These are often the subtle ways it creeps in, which is why we're shining a light on it and sharing it with you.
So actually, we've been taking a little pause on ad bashing lately because we keep seeing things in the collective as a whole to keep talking about. So we have been collecting all the fun ads we've been getting. And so we're going to do a whole episode of diet ad bashing. It's going to be coming your way soon.
Yeah. Well, that, and I've been paying a lot of attention the last few days, and I think it's my algorithm, and it's all for a certain thing that I will not mention right now. But
okay.
I just keep getting the same ad over and over again, basically. I was like, I got to mix this up.
I know. I get the same ads for a lot of stuff, too. So we wanted to bring this topic up today about weight loss versus fat loss because it's almost spring break. At least it is here in Texas. It's like right around the corner. And so people are going to be doing things to be getting ready for their spring break body, whatever that means. And then that leads to people being like, oh, it's almost time for bathing suits for their summer body, whatever that means to them. So I want to make sure that we talk about this thing about weight loss versus fat loss. And because people will say that when they want to lose weight, it's the assumption that it's fat that they want to lose. But the means that people go through to want to lose the weight slash fat does not equate to actually only losing fat. People aren't just going to lose fat. And I don't think they realize that.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they realize really what you're saying because I don't even know that people think about fat versus muscle because some people are just so happy when the number goes down. It doesn't matter to them. Like they don't even care why. They're just so stuck on the scale and the number. Mm-hmm. And they just assume that it's good, right? Any weight loss is good. And this is like what we've been preaching from the beginning is it's like, just because the scale goes down doesn't mean that great things are happening in your body.
Right. Yeah. And I wanted to be really specific about this because sometimes we dance around a topic or we get close to it, but we're just going to be super specific about what's happening in the body on a high level. We're not going into nitty gritty details about this hormone versus that hormone and cellular things, but we want to kind of talk on a high level about what's actually going on when people want to go on quick diets or lose weight quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So people will gain weight often as fat. Sometimes there will be a little bit of extra water weight that happens in there as well, depending on the amount of inflammation they're having. But most of the time, as people gain weight, they are gaining fat because fat is extra stored energy, energy that your body uses to function. So it's like a reserve system. It's your savings account. It's energy that your body couldn't use at the time of that meal or before your next caloric intake. So it's like, okay, I can't use this right now. I'm going to push this off to the side. Oh, look, there's some more food coming in, so I'm not going to use that either. I got to use this up first. So that's how we gain weight over time. It's just stored energy. So it's a safety mechanism because we do need a certain amount of fat, both men and women. We're not really designed to be walking around living at a very lean state of fat for long stretches of time. We need that ability to go in and out, and genetics play a role in this body type as well. There are going to be people that are naturally walking around in a leaner, less fat state, able to store fat than others. Like there's a lot of genetic variability there.
I mean, speaking from a privileged state where we can go to the store, we're not talking about people living in food scarcity, but humans prior to convenience, if we were hunting and gathering, we weren't necessarily eating three meals a day every single day.
Right.
There would be times where we would basically store up for winter or, you know, there would be lean times and there would be times for feasting. And so our body was meant to be adaptable to that.
Correct.
Not to having fast food around every corner every day.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason why it's so easy for us. If depending on your heritage, there are some that are better at it than others to store that extra fat. Because if you have a line of family that managed to make it through the potato famine, you know, all these different, they've been able to start to link these things up. There are just some people that their body went through a stressor and then they were able to add fat. But now, like you said, because we have this abundance of food, on top of that, the food companies make it very easy and tasty to not notice the extra caloric intakes of food because our brain's like, well, this is so amazing and it feels so good in my mouth and it's so tasty that we don't realize like that extra caloric intake that is happening. And so the body's doing what it's supposed to do, which is holding on to the extra calories that it couldn't use as fat.
Yeah.
Because we might be needing it in the future.
Yeah. I would say sometimes the caloric density also of these foods does not equal like satiety or fullness.
No. Yeah.
And that's really frustrating. You're like, I think I just ate like 2,000 calories, but I'm not that full.
Yeah, it is. It's really sort of a mind F about like, how that can be. But that is one of like the major things about understanding processed foods, especially ultra processed foods and their hyper palatability. They're meant to do that so that company can sell more and make more money. So they can send that off to their shareholders and buy their third house and, you know,
yay, capitalism.
Yay.
And then they're going to sell you drugs.
And then they'll sell you drugs to try to lose weight. Okay. That's as always a different topic. So if you decide to go about losing the extra fat that you have put on over time, and a little sidebar, it's rarely that a person will suddenly gain a lot of weight. It is definitely possible, but it's not the norm and not really what we're talking about. So what most people do when they've gained this weight over time is they set about to lose that extra weight, which is fat, as quickly as possible because we like instant gratification, right?
Yeah, I don't want to work too hard or for too long.
Yeah, and so people have been hawking these quick fixes for almost like a couple hundred years now. Like you can look at old ads from the 1800s about weight loss and things like that. Some of the things were these weird magic potions by the traveling salesman. And then just keep going from town to town. Just
put on a corset and suck it in.
Suck it in. And then like the cabbage diet and then the slim fast diet. And, you know, we just keep making new iterations of it. So when we go on these types of quick fix types of things, first, what happens is you lose water. So you're losing water weight because you're taking in less carbohydrates usually. And so then it doesn't take as much water to store the carbohydrates. And so you lose that water. So that's the first thing that happens. And that's what people get really super jazzed about.
Yeah, they're like, I lost 5 pounds in 1 week.
Yeah, and there might be some water retention related to sodium intake.
It feels kind of real because without that water, you're kind of losing that puffiness. Inflammation goes down. You're like, I feel great.
Feel amazing. Yeah. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, but that's where people just feel super jazzed and motivated by thinking this is the fat that they don't want on their body anymore. And so they keep going with that same plan. And so as people continue to overcut calories, what's happening is they're actually now starting to break down muscle because what they're losing is not all fat that is being burned and lost. It is happening where you're also losing muscle and fat. The system is not perfect.
Yeah, which I feel like was really miscommunicated in keto times where it was like, if you're in ketosis, you're only losing fat.
Yeah, so what is very, very, very important that I need people to understand that losing muscle mass is not a good thing. It's very expensive energy to put on your body, the muscle. Like it takes a lot of work to put the muscle on. Now protein is relatively expensive. And so, you know, it's cost you physical dollars. It costs like metabolic energy.
Yes.
And then also it's very expensive energetically to your body to lose that muscle mass as well. And the other thing is that preserving muscle mass is a key indicator of health.
Yeah.
So as we age, muscle mass amount is an indicator of health.
As you were saying this, I was thinking about how when people lose weight and then they regain, you know, then it's harder to re-lose. I know there's other metabolic processes, but mm-hmm. it might also be because they're losing muscle mass, like with each weight loss. And like, if you don't have the muscle mass and now you're trying to lose weight again, like you're going against the grain by not having muscle mass.
Yes. There's a little bit of like hormonal factors that are happening that are, you know, extra influencing that process. But yes, it's about that was scary. Let's not do that again. And so the way to preserve muscle mass and lose fat at the same time is to go about this in a slower way, which is very difficult for people because they do not like the slowness of it because it's not instant gratification, or it's like a slow but gradual thing. And you also need to be doing things in your diet. And if you can be lifting, you know, doing something muscularly to be preserving that as well, stimulating that muscle to continue to grow.
And we're learning this as we are in our 40s, how important muscle mass is to hormonal balance and strength and just healthy aging and vitality as we go along. It's like you can kind of get away with it in your 20s, 30s.
Yeah.
In your 40s, you're like, oh, muscle. I need this.
Yes. Yes. And to that point, we naturally do lose muscle mass starting in our 40s. Both men and women, we naturally start to lose muscle mass. I want to say it's like about a percentage a year is like the rough estimate of it. And it continues to decline, especially without any effort to preserve it. So it is important to continue to support your body, both in what you eat and with some physical activity of some sort. I'm not asking people to become bodybuilders. You don't have to go join a CrossFit gym or anything, but you do need to stimulate your muscles in some capacity because that also, it's information to your brain about what's happening in your body, which is related to the longevity, and it also is stimulating to your bones as well. So that way your bones don't get osteoporosis and having the fractures as you get older.
Yeah, I saw a podcaster, she was like, weightlifting, she's like, it's the best thing for your vanity. I was like, oh God. But one of her things was like, you know, when you actually have muscle mass, it actually does help your skin stick to your body a little bit better. And I was like, I don't really care why you lift weights. Like, I'm glad that that's the conversation, is that we're talking more about this, especially as women, because it is so stigmatized as like weightlifting is like a masculine type of workout and we don't want to bulk or get too big or whatever that message is. And so I think we've all kind of shied away from that.
Yeah. Let's get tall. Let's get lean.
Yeah.
Do everything with 5 pounds. Yeah.
And I would say, like, I do build, if I am lifting, I do build muscle. So I don't know. I am mindful of it because I like to be able to not have to tailor my pants to fit my bodies. when they're too strong. But, you know, overall, I always felt better when I had muscle mass. So for me, one of the highest numbers I've ever seen on the scale was at a time where I was doing a lot more lifting and I was super, super strong. Like my body would be like rock hard, you know, and it was like I could notice a difference in like my waist. I know I lost body fat and I gained muscle. Mm-hmm. So it was just like, oh, I wasn't freaking out or panicking because I saw this number. I just was like, wow, I feel really strong. Mm-hmm. And I know I've said this on the podcast before. And then it was like after I had my kid and I saw the number go way down, I was like, that was all my muscle. Like I just knew that was my muscle that was gone because I hadn't done anything. And so to me, that was kind of disappointing. And,
right.
And it is hard because then, you know, I have slowly been building a little bit more fat. And now I'm in a phase where I'm like, okay, I got to like readjust this, you know, and it is expensive, like emotionally, energetically.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, okay, now I need to like go pay for this workout. And so if you can find the consistency over time, it will pay you back in full.
Correct. It is the consistency. And that's the thing that we just need people to understand. But anyways, so in order to maintain your muscle mass and lose weight, you need to eat adequate amounts of protein. And that's a key part of this equation. So as you reduce your caloric load, You also need to maintain the protein level in the food. And so there are some general debates on what that is, but it's very challenging to do this because one of the things that makes this more accurate is knowing what your lean body mass is. And the vast majority of people are not going to be able to get what their current muscle mass is to get their protein intake to keep following that. So we have kind of come to some research on if you exercise minimally, just kind of walking around, you're doing some things, then you need 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight. So how do you get from kilograms to pounds? It's take your weight and divide it by 2.2. So if you're 150, divide it by 2.2 and then multiply that by 0.8 and you get how much protein you should take in a day. Mm. Okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, if you are regularly exercising or lifting weights, then it's closer to 1 gram per kilogram of body weight. And some of the research is showing that as you increase the weights and you're more involved in these heavy lifting weights, it's about 1.3. And there is a limit as to where, like, there is no more benefit. And it's somewhere in the 1.3, 1.5 range. And that number kind of has been what's being debated in the research. And again, the nuance calculation is based on the fact that, you know, you can get more specific if you know what your lean body mass is. But if you don't, which most people don't know, then you just kind of do this and you get a rough estimate. And all that protein does not have to come from animal protein. Like, you can get it from plant-based sources.
So I want to come back to the amounts, but first, as you're talking about where to get the protein, do you have thoughts about like whole forms of protein, whether it's plant or animal, versus protein in things like shakes and bars?
I think you need both. So I follow some really, really smart people that are really in the nuanced part of working with nutrition in very trained individuals. And they are just like, the only way you can get in the protein is that they have to have some kind of supplemental protein shake, but that's not where the vast majority of it is. And it's just like the same thing for these very heavy weightlifters. They also can't get the carbohydrate needs if everything was in a full form. Like, they got to eat some of that very easy to digest carbs, like, you know, taking flour foods. And so there's just some aspects of that. But you can't just rely on protein shakes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want to go back to this math, which is our specialty.
It is not.
I know, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So when you say of body weight, is that current body weight or goal or lean mass?
Okay, so how we kind of think about this in the nutrition world, this is what we've always been taught, is you take your current, you figure out whatever is your current caloric needs, and then take this protein part of it. And then you subtract 250 to 500 calories. I think 500 sometimes for some people is too drastic. You subtract out 500 calories, and that's how many calories you should eat to have a sustained weight loss. It is not a quick fix weight loss plan.
Well, no, but I'm saying for if you're going to calculate the grams of protein,
you would start with where you're at, because what that's what you're trying to maintain, what you're trying to lose.
Okay, so you would want to fuel the protein for your current body weight, not for your goal body weight.
Right, and so if you think you're increasing.
Or is it current lean?
Well, mass? So that's the thing, is that what you really want to do is find out what your current lean body mass is and base it off of that. But the problem is that very few people have access to get that information. We get somewhat closer with the smart scales that are out now. Like, I have the Renfo. And, you know, it gets within 2 or 3% of what the DEXA scan is, because I had compared them. So it gets within spitting distance, which is better than taking a stab at it, because we're really awesome at over and underestimating things. So if you can find a friend that has one, if you don't want to buy one, that's fine. There are companies around where you can get this information. So there's a possibility to get it. You just have to, you know, work a little harder to get it.
Well, and to be fair, most people, a lot of people are probably not getting the bare minimum of a 0.8 per pound.
It depends. So some people are already like going way over. And again, it still is energy.
Right. And so they could be overeating protein.
Correct. I'm going to digress for 1 second. And that's part of the reason why some people are not successful on the keto diet is because the keto diet is that you are relying on fat, because the body is able to take excess protein and turn it and use it as glucose. It's a very expensive process, but your body will do it. And so that's why some people don't find that a success, because they're like, well, I'm not losing the weight, but my carbs are like super low. So then they keep cutting the carbs down even more and more. But what's happened is they're actually not doing the right math on the protein to fat ratio for what keto really is. It's a very small amount of protein. It's like 15% of your caloric needs coming from protein, very minimal from carbohydrates, and like 85%, 80% coming from fat. Like, it's really high. And so then people overdo protein, and then they're not seeing that sustained keto response.
Yeah. Okay, so I have another question, which is, you saw this post. Did you have a thought on it? Because I'll explain that it's it is a doctor, and she mentions that she thinks the RDA 0.8 is too low, and then she gives some guidelines that go as high as 1.6.
That, I mean, you have to, that is like what's in the literature for very heavy manual labor people and bodybuilders, athletes, like professional athletes. Right. Their job is to move their body hard most days of the week.
Right.
So that 1.6 is the range. And the current research is showing there's no benefit even to those people after 1.6. I don't know. Like, it's hard to say. I think the 0.8, like, it has held up in a lot of cases. What I think is challenging is that our food supply is different, and it's hard to know what's really happening. And there's a lot of people that I've seen in the past where, you know, they are definitely not getting to the 0.8 even. And there are some that are getting well over it, and their body doesn't need that.
Mm-hmm. And then it's like, am I really actually going to measure my exact grams of protein per day? Because we are not even really counting macros most of the time, but it is good to get an idea of where you're at.
Yeah. So this comes down to what I tell every client is, I want you to track your food for at least a week, because you need to know what is happening. And so you have a starting point, because we are not good at estimating these things. We really are not. And so we're trying to look at what does a week look like, because that's, we're looking at a snapshot of a week, not like, you know, these three perfect days or these three not so great days. I want to know what happens over the course of the week so we can average it out. And then it's like, okay, you're over, you're under. Here's where we need to make these adjustments so your body can get the fuel that it needs. And it's all based off what people want to do. Like, what is their activity level? Do they want it to stay the same? Do they want to increase?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what we're basing it off of. It's not only just to lose weight, but you gotta know.
Right.
You have to know something. You need data.
Totally. You need some data. That's part of the challenge for a lot of people, is just looking at the data. Not even just collecting it, but looking at it and being like, oh, this is what I'm doing, without adding judgment or shame to it, you know? If you were trying to get your money in order, you'd have to look at your bank account. You'd have to see how much debt you're in or whatever it is in order to, like, get a grip on it. And so it's the same with food. We're not asking for this data to shame anyone or judge them or tell them, oh, you can never eat pizza again. It's like, oh, no, we're just trying to get a grip and see where we can make these small shifts so that you can get closer to these amounts. That's going to help you feel better.
Yes, that is true.
And at the end of the day, too, it's teaching people, like we always talk about, like your hunger signals and, you know, how do you physically feel? Like, even if it was this amount of protein, we're not asking you to stuff yourself full of steak.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, you got to listen to your own body as well. And that gives you just as much information as these data.
Yeah. And I really think that we need to get protein from both animals and plants. I don't think that, you know, it's only has to be from meat or fish or eggs. I think that there should be a balance of where these nutrients come from, because the research about looking at TMAO, which is an enzyme that's in the body and is related to inflammation and cardiovascular disease and things of that nature that's happening in the body. And it does. It rises with animal proteins.
Mm-hmm.
The research on it is still new, but they're just like, this TMAO being elevated definitely all day, every day for years on end does not support people's health that we can tell at this point. It's actually, you know, detrimental to some degree. And so I think if we can find that balance between eating plants and animal-based sources, that the TMAO can come up and down and have mm-hmm. that flexibility that has been there for a really long time.
Yes.
Right. Our body, what it does in digestion is it takes all the food down to small molecules. So when we digest protein, we break it all down in our stomach because, you know, your stomach acid is super, super low pH. That way can undo those really strong protein molecules in foods. And then by the time it gets to the small intestine to get absorbed, we're talking about single amino acids that are getting absorbed here. So if it's coming from only plants or only animals, at some point your body just is like, well, I'm just getting these amino acids. The thing about plant-based is that we are missing some of the amino acids that we need, but not all of them, right? We still get a lot of them.
And I think we talked about this when we were talking about the omnivore vegan conversation. And then just to go back to hunters and gatherers, right? Like there would be times where you had meat and times where you didn't.
Right.
And, you know, so the more we can kind of emulate what's natural for our bodies, the better off we're going to
be. Yeah, humans are adaptable. That's how we made it. We became super adaptable to a lot of different environments versus many animals are very specific to their environments. But humans, we managed to figure out all sorts of living conditions and food sources to get us humming along. And that's why we've made it. So we are adaptable to all of these things.
I guess you could argue like we are adapting to the current food environment, but it's not great.
It's not, we're not adapting well. I think how long it would take us to get through those inflammatory markers and adapt to having that inflammation all the time would, I think, take out too many people and needless suffering, right? So I don't hold out hope that it's going to happen in our living time frame. I just always think of the movie WALL-E.
And what's the other one with Luke Wilson?
Idiocracy?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Oh, yes. All right. So the SlimFast diet of a shake for breakfast and lunch and a sensible dinner is not going to preserve your lean mass while cutting fat mass. And then what is the current, what's the ideal protein?
Yeah, like what's the current, because does anybody even drink SlimFast?
I mean, I think that some people do, but, you know, that's like what I always think about is, you know, the many versions of which we have seen, like, I think, you know, in our first year of the podcast, you know, we kept seeing that one soup diet. And then it was the same thing. Yeah. It was like a soup broth for breakfast and lunch and a sensible dinner.
Yeah.
And that's not going to do it. That's not going to preserve your lean mass while cutting fat mass. And I think about like the ideal protein. In theory, that's like what they're thinking is like, okay, well, this protein will help keep you full, will help you lose the weight. But it's such a severe caloric intake. And then when you get tired of only drinking your food, you then are going back into the calories. And so then your body's like, holy mackerel, like that was terrible. Let's not let that happen again. And then you put on more weight. So that's sort of what happened is that ideal protein is an attempt to help with that satiety and help with that preservation. However, it's because of the extreme caloric intake, and then you're dealing with all those hormones related to extreme weight loss quickly.
Mm-hmm. Low and slow.
So putting on and taking off fat mass is a long haul endeavor. I'm very sorry that there is no quick fix around this. The body does not like to operate in extremes. It works very, very, very hard to keep things in this fine window of functionality. And it will try to adapt to meet you where you are and be like, oh, I guess this is where we're functioning now. And it's like, okay, this has been our normal for a long time, and it wants to stay there. It wants to keep you there. So that's why these things are challenging. And when we try to do these extremes, it's just a mess. So enjoy the process. Let's do this. We can do it. Come on, people. We can do it.
Hello? Is anybody out there?
Are you listening? I know. Like, don't be mad, but it's true, you know? Like,
I mean, to some extent, we're also speaking from experience.
100%.
Lived experience of doing this. So if anything, just take it as wisdom from two middle-aged women.
And on that note.
Well, I sure hope we gave you something new to think about today and helped you take one more step on your path to freeing yourself from diet culture. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast and follow us on Instagram at path_nutrition. And if you need help with any of this, we would love to help you. Go to our website, pathnutrition.com.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.